All right, we are back on the record. Can you hear us all right in Watford City?
Hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. There is one person from the public that wishes to testify, so I'll give you their name.
I didn't hear that.
I said there is one person from the public that's interested in testifying, so I can give you her name now.
Sure.
It's Pamela Link.
Okay.
Okay, and then give me about 5 seconds here to get reconnected.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, can you still hear us?
I can.
Okay, you're good.
Okay. All right, we are now back on the record, and Mr. Morrison, you can call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. Next witness will be Bill McCarthy.
Okay. Mr. McCarthy, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I need to give you the oath as well, and I need to advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It's a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both, and being advised of the penalty for perjury. Do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Morrison.
Bill, would you state your name, tell us whom you're employed in what capacity, and give us your business address?
My name is Bill McCarthy. I am employed by E3 Environmental. My project manager, the address is 871 Jefferson Avenue, St. Paul, Minnesota.
And Bill, you were primarily responsible for the preparation of the application, which we marked as Exhibit 1, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And you coordinated the various studies and communications and consultations that went into that application?
Yes, sir.
I have a few questions about the process. Can you describe for the commission the process you went through to identify a study area and then what you did within that study area once you had it identified?
Yes, sir. We work with the client, One Oak, in this case, to site a facility of this nature. It's an iterative process, which we try to identify a location which fits the criteria of the state siting requirements. As the sites are narrowed down, we do a desktop analysis of the area, accessing public information relative to natural resources, cultural resources, et cetera, to identify any potential issues that would be in conflict with the site. As the site search narrows and a property area has been identified, we augment our desktop studies with consultations with various agencies, seeking their input for additional information specific to the location. And then finally, we do site field work, both environmental surveys, wetland water bodies, threatened endangered species, et cetera, as well as cultural resources.
Can you identify the size of the study area that you used in this case? Maybe we want to refer to Appendix C, is that
Appendix B, you'll see in the center of the maps included in Appendix B, the 160-acre project site, which will be developed the plant to go forward, and then you'll see a dash line at a one-half-mile radius around there, which encompasses our study area.
And, Bill, maybe before we go into some of the other issues we've got to identify or respond to one question that came up earlier, if you turn to the second page in Appendix B, which is kind of the aerial photo, there was a question about the nearest occupied residence to the facility. Using that lab or that aerial photo, can you identify where those residences are?
Correct. And actually, I'm going to go put back to the topo to begin with. If you look to the eastern extent of the study area, right above the label of Section 21, there is a small, dark rectangle in the northeast border section. That is one of the potentially occupied structures that we identified in our analysis. And then immediately south of the project area, and it's technically actually outside of our study area, but if you put a 500-foot buffer on it, it would intersect into our study area. Right, it's actually in Section 29, right below where you'll see the well identified, there was another potentially occupied structure that we identified those were the two closest potentially occupied structures that we identified in our analysis.
You mentioned earlier that part of your analysis is to do consultations with various agencies. Can you identify for the commission the state and federal agencies that you need to consult with in connection with the project?
Yes, sir. We consulted with the Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, North Dakota Game and Fish Department, North Dakota Parks and Recreation Department, North Dakota Historic Preservation Office, North Dakota Department of Trust Lands and Mineral Management Division, and the Service Management Division, and finally the North Dakota Department of Health.
And did any of them have significant concerns about this project?
We received two comments back from our consultations. One was from the Parks and Rec Department that recommended that we restore any areas with native vegetation, and we put that under consideration. The second concern that was raised came from the Surface Management Division, and they identified in their area of interest, which is northeast of the project site, there are certain soils there that they are, that they know have reclamation issues. And although it doesn't directly affect the siting of this facility, future development, if there were lines coming in to feed the plant, they would like some coordination for crossing those particular soils to ensure their interests were well addressed.
When you say the soils division, that would be of the Department of Trust Lands?
The trust lands, yeah, they had the interest in the soils, yes.
What's the present use of the 160 acres that's going to be used?
Right. When we went out and did our surveys and supported by desktop analysis, this area has been in active agriculture, tilled fields for a number of years, and that's its present use prior to this proposed project.
And Bill, you're familiar with the exclusion and avoidance areas that the commission has identified through its rules which govern the application site procedures?
Yes, sir.
Are there any, let's talk first of all, exclusion areas. Are there exclusion areas either in the site or in the study?
Let's start with the study area. We did identify within the study area public lands, and those would be the state's lands that we just spoke about, happen to fall within the study area. And then with respect to within the project site, there was private farmland that's recorded. 5% of the project site, which totals about 9.2 acres, have been classified as prime farmland.
What about avoidance areas? Were there avoidance areas that were identified?
Yes, sir. And these come in the form of woodlands and wetlands, and certainly when you take a study area of about a mile by diameter, incised areas and drainages tend to have some water by type features and woodlands, and on the site itself, we did have a small amount of woody vegetation, I think of 200-some of an acre that we recorded that fall within the project site, and one regulated wetland associated with those woodlands.
So you're understanding that most of that will be avoided in the construction of the plant?
Correct. It's very closely associated with the perimeter property line. And the way the project's designed, those impacts of those two features would be avoided.
And are you familiar with the plans to obtain the stormwater permits for the facility?
Yes, sir.
And can you describe that for the commission?
Correct. We're working with the project engineers, Jeff Gammon and his group, for delivering, developing a construction stormwater plan. And a management stormwater once a plant is operational. It would not need a industrial stormwater plan because it would be exempt. But during construction, we would have a construction stormwater plan. And this plan is two-phase. It collects water that would enter the site from off-site and directs it around the facility for discharge. And then water, that stormwater that we collect on the plant proper, is directed to a collection facility, most commonly referred to as retention. and working from our experience up in Williams County, we've analyzed our stormwater handling capabilities to design a system that would not result in additional discharges beyond what the current state is prior to development. And the plan is still being refined. Our goal would be to ensure that our discharges would be similar to what the current state is.
And Bill, you're also familiar with the documents we've identified as Exhibits 3 and 4 in this case, is that correct?
That is correct.
Can you just briefly tell the Commission, let's take Exhibit 3 first, what Exhibit 3 is, and then describe the reason for the exhibit?
Exhibit 3 is from the Mineral Trust lands. It's a response. Their response was not received at the time of our filing of the application, and it concurs with our analysis of where the Mineral Trust lands occur within the study area.
And then let's turn to Exhibit 4 and just tell us what Exhibit 4 is.
Exhibit 4 is a response from the North Dakota Game and Fish. And it was a minor correction of their letter issued previously in which they referenced an incorrect project. They simply corrected the project reference and stated no concerns.
Bill, in your opinion, will the location and operation of the plant produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and the welfare of the citizens?
That's correct.
In your opinion, is the plant compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources?
That's correct.
And in your opinion, will the plant location minimize adverse human environmental impact while ensuring consistent, continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are kept in the flow of the impact?
That's correct.
I don't have further questions of what is concerned.
Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you, Your Honor. During your testimony, you said that this site does have some prime farmland on it. I believe the number you said was 9.2 acres. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, can you just kind of describe what makes farmland prime farmland?
Right. It's a mapping unit designated by the, I believe it's by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and through various characteristics, it's identified as being capable of producing high yields is the thumbnail approach to that now.
Will the construction of this facility remove any prime farmland that's not located on the facility? So I'm talking about adjacent properties. Will this facility have a negative impact on prime farmland not located on this facility siting?
If I understand you correct, your question correctly, the question was, would this facility have any potential adverse effect on prime farmland located off the facility property? If that is your question, my answer to that is no.
And yes, that was my question. Thank you for clarifying. So is it your testimony that the expected loss of the use of this prime farmland will be negligible to the state of North Dakota?
That is correct. I think our analysis, you can see in section 4.3.4, page 18, that there are an estimated 9.7 million acres of prime farmland in the state of North Dakota, and our impacts would be relatively negligible at 9.2 acres.
Just to shift gears a little bit here, I want to talk about wildlife for just a brief minute. The application alludes to the whooping crane as being a potential habitant of the facility. Can you just elaborate on what the precautionary measures One Oak will implement in the event of a whooping crane sighting?
You bet, I'd be happy to. The reason why we address the whooping crane specifically is it potentially can occur in this area twice annually in a spring migration or in a fall migration. And when these birds are migrating, they use a wide range of habitat for various migratory reasons, particularly potentially foraging. They forage in a wide range of areas, including actively tilled areas. And so that is part of why we have a special plan set aside for whipping cranes. We monitor U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service broadcasts. They have a list server of the progress of the cranes biannually, and we monitor that. During construction, we will train, or prior to construction, we'll train our workforce to identify these birds. They're relatively easily to identify, 5 feet tall and white. They're hard to confuse with other species that might be in the area. And they've been trained, the staff would be trained to suspend heavy equipment activity if birds are sighted within 1/2 mile line of sight of active construction. Suspend those heavy equipment activities, report the bird. One oak would then report to the Fish and Wildlife Service, and as those birds vacate on their own from that type of location and proximity to the active construction, work would then resume.
I want you to flip to a map. It's the first map in Appendix A of Appendix C. That's kind of confusing. If you go to Appendix C, you'll flip back about halfway through, and there's a colored map, and on the next page it just says ND SHPO. It's in the North, I believe it's in the North Dakota Parks and Recreation Department's section.
Okay.
Yeah, you see it's the colored map on the reverse side of that map. It's white with red lines, and on the flip side, it's a colored map. It looks like a Google Maps image of the area.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, I think I directed you to the wrong map. Apologize for the confusion. Well, in any event, I'll continue with the question. I don't know if we even really need that map. It would have just been nice for reference. But on the map that I have you looking at right now, you'll see two brown colorations that are just offside of the gas plant location. They look like they're some type of storage units. Can you just verify what those two brown locations are?
I'm actually, maybe we can try to navigate the same spot here. Appendix A, site maps, and that's from our wetland jurisdictional request. And I see two appear to be well pad developments immediately outside of the project site. It's delineated by a red boundary up in the northeast corner, probably closest proximity to the facility is appears to me to be a well pad, and then down in the southwest adjacent property, again, appears to be somewhat of a well pad, about a couple hundred thousand feet perhaps from the where it's labeled as Pemeral 1. Is that, those are two features you're referring to?
Yes, those are the two. Actually, I apologize for the earlier confusion. My tab fell off, and I had the letters put in the wrong area for the map I wanted to direct you to. It's actually Appendix D. So if you flip to Appendix D, there is a map labeled Appendix A within Appendix D. probably about 15 pages into Appendix D.
Yep. I think I have it.
Okay. And on that map, do you see where it has project boundary, then cultural resource, wetland, woody vegetation, and noxious weeds all labeled?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then you see there's an ephemeral stream labeled that flows kind of to the, I guess, left of center of the project boundary?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And the two brown locations that I asked you about, the ones I was referring to are the one in the northeastern corner of the map and the one in the southwestern part of the map. Is your testimony still the same with regard to what those two locations are?
Yes, sir. Those are the same features, and my opinion of those remain the same. I believe those are both wellhead developments.
Have them say that again.
Can you repeat your last answer? We had some trouble hearing it.
Correct. My testimony stands. I believe both of those features appear to be wellhead developments.
On this map, there's two different locations where it states there's noxious weeds. In the application, it states that these are Canadian thistle. What precautions will One Oak take to ensure that these weeds not spread as a result of the construction of this project?
Correct. We will certainly identify these locations prior to construction. Pre-construction, we have the opportunity to use either mechanical or chemical means to address these features, then we would continue to monitor them post-construction and attempt to control them.
You look at the little stream that runs in. It's named Ephemeral Stream 1. Can you just briefly describe the characteristics of this stream?
Correct. Part of our field survey of the site was to assess the natural resource features that were there. And when we did our desktop analysis, there was a water body feature indicated by the GIS data. That feature we could not relocate, but this feature was identified by field studies. It's a small, poorly defined water body, a drainage that drains essentially from the western perimeter there northerly, and it's temporary in nature for its water permanence, and it lacked the physical characteristics that would qualify it to be a water of the U.S., and therefore it's a non-jurisdictional water body.
Will this stream be negatively impacted by the construction of this project?
Correct. By our studies and then by our consultation with the Army Corps of Engineers specific to this feature, we obtained an Army Corps of Engineers determination, jurisdictional determination, that this feature is non-jurisdictional to the Army Corps of Engineers, and as such allows us to develop the site and modify that drainage.
I'm going to shift gears to the cultural resources that are located within the study area. In the application, it discusses the Class 3 study that was performed, and there was one find in that study. Can you just briefly describe what was found? I believe it's identified as Cultural Site 1 on the map that we're currently looking at.
Correct. There's a more detailed report later on in the same appendix, but we found remnants of two foundations, what appeared to be some manly depressions associated with those foundations, and a what they call a deadhead, which would be an anchoring type system for a guide wire. Based on our records of available information, we could not find any definitive information about homesteading in the area. Its proximity to the water body kind of makes sense. It had some maybe kind of watering type purpose early in life. There was not enough material remaining on site to make a definitive analysis, nor to qualify it as an eligible resource. We submitted our report to the SHPO office. they reviewed it and they concurred with our opinion of, that the site was not eligible and required no further mitigation.
Does One Oak have a policy in place for an unexpected cultural resource find during the construction of this project?
Yes, sir. We have. We will train our staff in an unanticipated discovery plan, which excavations of this nature, staff are trained to, in the event of uncovering an unanticipated resource, to suspend activities, establish a buffer, typically a 100-foot buffer, and then to notify the appropriate management personnel so that we can bring a qualified archaeologist on site to study what the resource might be and then to make the additional external agency communications as appropriate.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Ms. Prescott?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Just have a couple questions, Bill. Brian did a great job of covering a lot of the information relative to your expertise, but just a few follow-ups. First of all, could you go to the, let's see, it's the second map in Appendix B, the overview of this area. Just want your help identifying a few other things.
Yes, ma'am.
You ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So you identified the two well sites on the. So two other things on the south of the 160 acres where the site is going to be constructed. There's another looks to be a well pad. Is that what you would say that is? Just south of the plant's proposed site?
Right. If we're talking about the same, within our study area, there did appear to be another kind of brown developed area, and again, I believe that is another well pad development.
Okay, and then off on the outside, just outside of the boundary of the study area, there's another on the southwest kind of corner right before Demick's Lake. Is that another well pad?
Correct. I believe that is correct.
And then on the east corner directly, or east part of the map, directly east of the plants, the quarter that the plant is on, there's a lot of... there's some roads, kind of windy roads, and is that what we think is the nearest residence, or what is that area of development?
Yes, ma'am, that is one of the potential occupied structures that we identify.
Is it a farm, ranch?
It has that characteristic to it, and that's why we labeled it as such. I can't go any further on description of it.
All right, but that was within your study area, it looks
yeah.
like.
Correct.
Okay. You're not aware of any communication between the company and that potential landowner?
I'm not aware of any communication between those two parties.
Okay. Then if you could just summarize for me, Bill, your greatest potential concerns, if there were any, on the development within this site, both environmental and cultural.
That's a broad and challenging question. I'll do my best to share with you my concerns. I think just generally we want to be good stewards to the environment. And good stewards of the environment go all the way from the folks who own the resources, the mineral rights, to the end users. And through that entire process, I think we want to be diligent in following the rules and regulations and looking for opportunities where it makes sense, both from good business practice and corporate citizenship. Perhaps we go above and beyond to manage these resources in a way with the care and respect.
You don't have any particular concerns in this location, though, as you've indicated.
Right. In this particular situation, I think we've identified a very, what I refer to as a benign location from an environmental perspective. It's a good location for development, well-situated, well-sited, and it meets all the criteria.
Okay. And then just back to that one landowner within the study area or potential occupied residence. How would the company have communicated with them, or is there any chance that those people don't know this is happening within, you know, a half mile of their home?
I think there's always the risk of the unknown. I think of myself as a landowner. I don't always know when transactions occur between property owners if I'm not directly involved. And so through the sale of the property and the planning and development, there's always the possibility of a communication gap.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
Bill, is Demick's Lake a fishery or just a body of water?
I'm not entirely sure. I believe it's potentially a fishery, but I neglected that for my study.
When that water is discharged, if I understood it right, it would be discharged primarily out of the northwest corner of the plant site. And where does that water go then? Is that just a valley and it becomes absorbed in the adjoining agricultural land, or is that a flowing stream that it flows to some particular destination?
Right. The flow is from a watershed type analysis, which is on growth scale, would enter first the Clear Creek drainage, which then drains into the Tobacco Garden Creek, and that ultimately collects and drains into Lake Sepulveda, which is 14 miles away. Now, whether any of the water originating on the project site will ultimately reach the lake is hard to say and very unlikely, but that's the overall drainage pattern of this area based on a watershed analysis.
Well, when I look at this map in Appendix B, and it's sort of shaded in with blue lines, does that indicate that it's a stream that would typically have water setting in it? Or is that just the direction that the valley goes?
This is desktop data that you see in this imagery. It's NHD data. And that data will identify potential drainages and flowages. And if you recall earlier, this would be the first phase of our studies to identify these potential features. When we augmented our desktop and went out on site, that blue line that crosses perpendicular or by diagonal from the southeast corner to the northwest corner, when we went out in the field to study and relocate that site and to assess it, we could not find it. There were no features there. So that data set is good diagnostic tool, the NHD data, but it's not definitive, and that's why we augment our desktop work with field work.
What's the difference between NHD on that map and NWI on the previous map?
You bet. The NWI data is National Wetlands Inventory. That data is collected and administered by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and that data is designated to identify wetland features, whereas the NHD data is designated to identify flowages.
Thank you. I have no other questions.
Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Bill, for being here today. You and I have visited a lot over the years. You testified that you'd taken the lessons learned from the Williams County project where we had the challenges with the runoff exceeding the size of the storage. and you've fixed that this time around. How did you? What did you do different in these plants?
Thank you again for the opportunity to kind of revisit that topic. And it was a great learning experience. One of the fundamental principles that we learned is that the design was really adequate, but our ability to defend the design was lacking. And we brought in a third party in the Williams County instance to analyze our design and to demonstrate that we were in compliance. And so one of the biggest lessons learned is that going forward, we're doing that analysis up front prior to construction to ensure that our assumptions can be proved out by models.
Well, I'll push a little back then, Bill. I don't think design was right. It went all over the farmer's field. So how do we make sure that doesn't happen again?
I think with the up in Williams County, what we had was some landowner issues that fell outside the boundaries of that stormwater issue. And we are very close to being able to share with you that third-party analysis that demonstrates that we conform to all the zoning requirements and the discharge requirements.
Okay, Bill, I'll go one more time. You may conform with all the rules and do everything correctly, but we still had an upset landowner. How are we going to make sure that doesn't happen here?
I think we have the opportunity to work with our adjacent landowners and communicate with them in advance to identify our developments and to ensure that our designs meet the siting criteria. Beyond that, I don't know if there's much we can proactively do or that I can speak on behalf of One Oak without perhaps counseling on the side.
Okay. The following up a little bit on Commissioner Fedorchak's question about the resident, the way I understand it, you did a one-mile study area, and we have a landowner a half mile from the facility. Am I understanding that correct? Okay, so how could you do a study without talking to the landowner?
Well, historically what we've done from analyze potentially occupied structures is a desktop analysis to identify where those are. In this particular instance, we identified this potential structure and placed a 500-foot buffer on it, which is our classic siting criteria for pipeline, and it falls within the study area but does not intersect the project site.
Okay, then maybe we might have to, John, get another witness back up here because I need to flesh out what is the blast radius that we think at this time and how that relates to the landowner who's a half mile away. So, Bill, if you could answer that, I'd be happy, but I'm thinking that might have to go somewhere else.
We'll handle that.
And then, John, while we're, I'll just give my last thoughts, is I do have some concerns now about the company being able to do dirt work ahead of the conditional use permit for the county, because what I didn't say the last time I spoke was there's quite a fight brewing up there in McKenzie County between WBI Pipeline and the county, where WBI claims that they have interstate facilities, so then the Federal Natural Gas Act means they don't have to deal with counties. So this is brewing. WBI claims they don't need county conditional use permit because federal law is clear. The county is pushing back saying, yes, you do. But I'm trying to see, are you using any of that leverage on what the Natural Gas Act might say or not say to then be able to do work ahead of the county permit? So if you could kind of answer that question, John.
I'm happy to answer that, and the answer is no, we're not leveraging anything from the Natural Gas Act to circumvent county zoning. I think it's One Oak's intent to comply with all zoning requirements, and we're in that process actively as we speak.
Okay, so there's commitment from the company to follow through, absolutely agree to obtaining a conditional use permit.
To get zoning approval, not necessarily a conditional use permit in this case.
Fair enough. Okay, that's all the questions I have. If you could just address the emergency response question on blast radius.
Yeah, we'll recall that to address that when it's
right. Thank you.
Mr. Morrison, any follow-up questions for this witness?
No questions.
Okay. Mr. Schmidt?
Nothing further, Your Honor. Ms. Prescott?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Fedorchak? Commissioner Christman? Oh, Your Honor. Commissioner Kolk? Okay. Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Mr. Morrison, you can call your next witness.
We will recall Jeff Hammond for some very good testimony.
Okay.
And Jeff, you're still under oath.
Yes.
First of all, an issue came up with respect to notice to landowners. Has, in fact, notice been given to all landowners within a certain radius of the plant?
Part of the application for the zoning change is notification to landowners. I believe within half a mile, we expand the radius to 1 mile. To this point, I think that was last fall, November timeframe. And we verified that landowners have not changed since then, about 2 or 3 weeks ago. To this point, we've only had one response of one of the gentlemen that actually farmed the property, but no concern of any of the other landowners within a 1 mile radius.
And that's the gentleman who's a tenant on the 160 acres of the plant site, is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, so no comments from any of the other adjoining.
That is correct.
And I think you indicated earlier that the blast cutting will be done at a later time. Is that correct?
That is correct.
But can you comment on whether or not that house within the half mile or occupied residence within the half mile plant would be affected by the blast radius?
I do not believe that it would be affected by blast.
No further questions.
Can you turn it up again, Darryl?
Mr. Schmidt?
I have no further questions.
Ms. Prescott? Commissioner Fedorchak?
I just wanted to confirm that he said he doesn't believe it will be affected. Is that a no, it won't be affected?
Until we have the official study from our contractor that looks at the layout of the facility with everything, I can't give you a definitive on that.
Then just if you could explain to me what happens if your study comes back and that residence is affected. Do you change your plans, or how do you deal with that?
Could you repeat that?
Sure. If you help me understand what you do if you complete your study and it turns out that this residence is within this blast radius, how does the company deal with that? Do you alter your plans, or what measures do you take to protect that residence?
At this time, I probably can't comment on that.
Is it your opinion you would take some steps to protect the residency and do whatever is necessary?
That is correct.
Whether it's redesign of your facility or acquire the residence or whatever you would need to do.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
I just wanted to clarify when you said that the only comment you've had is from the tenant that farms the ground where the facility would be built. Does that mean then that that is not the resident in either of these two residences that are about a half mile away?
That was not the resident. It was a landowner directly to the west of the property that was currently farming the land, and he was unaware that it was being sold.
Okay, and you did say that all the residents within a mile were notified. How long ago was that?
We sent out registered mail in November of last year, and as I said, we reevaluated that list to make sure none of the names the landowners have changed since then, as of a couple weeks ago. So none of them have.
I have no other questions.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor, and thank you, Dick, for coming back up here. The when will the blast study be completed? Your best guess on a date?
After the initial assessments on, we do a hazard analysis of the plant with operations and engineering and consultants. And once that all gets evaluated, then it gets sent to another consultant for deciding on the facility layout that plans to take place in the next probably 3 months.
Okay, so back to my discussion point about when do you tell the county emergency managers of this project?
And just to clarify, this is Jeff Hammond testifying to answer that. We probably need to recall Derek, but which we certainly can do.
Okay, I'm sorry. I misunderstood who was testifying. But, yeah, well, just whoever can answer that question.
And the question is, How the blast plan ties into notifying the county emergency planners?
Before this witness goes, Julie has a question for him. But I guess, John, what I'm trying to get to is to get a witness to come up and walk me through when the study will be completed, how that relates to the county emergency managers, and then have someone with some expertise give me what the blast radius is for similar plants that have already gone through this process. So I guess that's the question, whatever witness you want.
I mean, the blast study will be completed before the plant is under construction, which, from my understanding with Dick's testimony earlier, that, we begin relationship with the emergency management toward the end of construction and begin doing all of those activities and touring the site and becoming familiar with those things at that point. So they can have the access to it. It may be better to speak.
Well, then I guess the last question that hasn't been answered then is, what would be the blast radius of a similar size plant that's already been vetted through the process?
And we'll recall Dick and he can answer that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Morrison, before we work back to Commissioner Fedorchak, do you have any follow-up questions at this time?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Schmidt?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Prescott?
Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead, Commissioner Fedorchak.
Sorry about that, and this question may be for Dick, too. I'm not sure who to direct it to. So I received a note from a county commissioner in your area, an email, from Vanita Best, and so I just wanted to disclose that. She was at the hearing earlier and had to leave and expressed some questions about traffic and what kind of traffic and dust control and that type of thing that the companies commit to. So if you guys could just walk through what kind of traffic you expect to have on these roads, what kind of improvements you might be making. I think you've touched on that a little bit, and your commitment for dust control and that sort of thing, just to maintain public safety and that type of stuff in this area.
During the construction activities, of course, there will be a considerable amount of traffic, considering that 250-300 employees or contractors will be accessing the site on a daily basis. You'll have that traffic. You'll also have any of the equipment coming in traffic. There'll be a number of trucks bringing in equipment. In the township meeting, that was a point that the township wanted to make sure that it was clear that One Oak would make any repairs that for any damages caused to the road leading into the plant. And we fully accept that. We will restore all of the roads to their existing condition. During construction, we have, I think, in the stormwater plan, there's a weed and a dust mitigation portion of it. If dust becomes a problem on site, they will water as necessary in order to maintain, or to suppress any dust that's generated from construction activity. Now, after the plant is done, we still will have operations that are going to and from the plant on a daily basis. And then there will be a number of trucks that are removing the condensate from the plant. And we estimate somewhere between, I mean, it's kind of seasonally dependent also, somewhere between 7 and 12 trucks a day for the first train to be accessing the site.
Okay, thank you. And will you double that then when you add the second train?
Yes, the traffic will increase on the truck portion and probably a small increase with the plant portion, you know, with the increase in the operations part.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Commissioner Chrisman?
No other questions.
Commissioner Kalk? Mr. Morrison, anything further for this witness?
Nothing for this witness.
Okay. Mr. Schmidt, was there anything else? Thank you, Mr. Hammonds. You can step down. And Mr. Morrison, if you've got another witness to recall, you can do so now.
I guess we'll recall Vic Vandenbosch real quick. Dick, are you familiar with blast plans that have been performed for other One Oak plants in the North Dakota area?
Yes.
And based on that, do you have any opinion as to the likely aerial extent of the blast impact on the ultimate site will be done here?
I guess I'm going to use as kind of a benchmark here with Garden Creek, the Garden Creek complex, and Lonesome Creek complex. While they're slightly different capacities of facilities, I want to kind of make a very important point here that, you know, I can't sit here and tell you specifically that it's going to be outside the half-mile buffer of that facility. But this slide, what I will tell you is that in the design of our facilities, our administrative building is within that footprint of that facility, which is our control center for our facility, where is our main office complex of our employee base. So, so in that blast study takes those types of structures into consideration. From a design over pressure protection of the building to that allows us to safely place our employees within that 160 acres. And in most instances, they're probably 150 yards from the main process area of the plant. So my concern of a off-site impact of a landowner that is outside that half-mile radius is almost doesn't exist.
And one of these landowners, I believe, is perhaps slightly inside the one-half-mile radius from the exterior of the 160-acre plant site. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Do you have any concerns for that?
I do not, no.
No further questions.
Mr. Schmidt?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Ms. Prescott?
Your Honor.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Thanks.
Commissioner Chrisman? And Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Dick, for coming up there. That was a very, very good point that you put out, kind of walking us back through the safeguards put in for protecting your, not only adjacent people but your own people. And perhaps that's something for John and our attorney, Brian, that we make sure we highlight that in a findings of fact kind of thing, because that was a very good testimony you just put out there. So thank you.
Mr. Morrison, anything further for this witness?
Nothing further.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Vandenbosch. Mr. Morrison, do you have another witness?
We have nothing further this time. We have a restaurant.
Okay. And it's my understanding that there is at least one public witness who would like to offer testimony. If we could have, I guess, that person or the first person to come up to the witness table.
I'm here.
Okay. Is this Ms. Link?
Yes.
Okay. I need to give you the same oath that I've given the other witnesses, but I guess before I do so, I just want to let you know, once you give your testimony, if you could just hold tight for a moment at the table and allow us an opportunity to see if any of the attorneys or the commissioners have any questions for you, okay?
Yes.
Okay. And Ms. Link, I need to advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It's a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. In being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
Yes, I do.
Okay, you can go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Pamela Link, and I'm the Governmental Affairs and Business Development Representative for the Laborers International Union of North America. More specifically, the Laborers District Council of Minnesota and North Dakota, and I am a Laborers 553 member here in North Dakota. Number one, we just want to voice our support for the project. As we have been doing more relationship building and getting more involved in North Dakota, we have learned of One Oak's strong safety reputation and their commitment to local communities. We also stand often in support of contractors that do work for One Oak, and one of our premier contractors does extensive work for One Oak, and our members report that there truly is a reputation of safety. For the first time in more than 55 years that the laborers have been working in North Dakota, we are stepping up to be more visible with contractors, with customers in a governmental affairs arena, and we are working to create a stronger, more skilled and trained workforce. A little over 3 years ago, we had approximately 113 members working. Last year, we peaked out in North Dakota with the 563 at 700. Adding members that came in from other states, we had more than 1,400 laborers working in the state of North Dakota. We have an extensive training program that we believe offers a lot to contractors in the Bakken oil field. We have more than 52 free classes for our members working in every aspect of safety from OSHA 10, OSHA 30, hazmat, tending, and different safety opportunities that create, a more comprehensive and safe, skilled workforce working in the oil field. We have stood before with many other contractors, and we believe that with our contractors and their certain customers that we are more than proud to stand and testify for their project. There are some in this state that we would not sit here and put out our support. I have a unique opportunity on the side that I manage a small organization that takes care of OSHA and safety training for more than 2,200 building trades members in the state of North Dakota, of which the laborers are part of the BizMed building trades and the North Dakota building trades. These members specialize in mobilizing for projects that deal in process, refining, and energy plants. I have also had a unique opportunity to be part of meetings. The president of the National Building Trades, Sean McGarvey, has come out to North Dakota wanting to meet more with contractors, customers, and to build our workforce so it is stronger and safer in the state of North Dakota. Lastly, we've taken a unique approach that we have joined the Northwest Landowners Association. The laborers and the 563 members want our landowners in the state of North Dakota to know that we do have a local workforce, and that also when we leave a project, that we are leaving a good reputation for our contractors and our customers. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Mr. Morrison, do you have any questions for Ms. Link?
No questions. Okay.
Mr. Schmidt?
No questions.
Okay. Ms. Prescott, anything? Okay. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Thank you, Pam. Appreciate you being there today. Sorry that we missed being there ourselves. And just want to appreciate you stepping up and talking a bit about your laborers' experience with One Oak and your comments about their safety record and other good relational records that you believe the company has. And that's great to hear, and appreciate you taking the time to be there. Thanks.
Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman?
My colleague, Mr. Cortina, and I would like to know that we will drive you next time.
We need a large van.
Go ahead, Commissioner Chrisman.
I too want to thank you, Ms. Link, for being patient and hanging in there and providing the non-company related perspective, and it's important for us to hear, and just appreciate you doing that, but I have no questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Griffin.
Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Pam, for coming today. I do have one question, though. One of my colleagues asked a question to the company about where do we house all these people and all those kind of things. Just out of curiosity, you know, hopefully you get the chance for your folks to work, but how do you deal with that issue?
You know, one of our main contractors that works for One Oak, they've been very strong at securing housing in crew camps, and also with campers. We have not had a problem out here with finding housing for our members.
Okay, thank you, Pam.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Link. You can step down. And if there are any other members of the public there, I'd ask that you please come forward at this time. I guess, Mr. Morrison, do you see, is there anybody there, any other members of the public that are coming forward?
There are not. There are a number here, but they're not coming forward.
Okay. Mr. Morrison, do you have a closing statement that you'd like to make?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The hearing's gone on a while. I think the record is complete. I do know that we have the exhibits here, and we have the attendance list. I can either deliver those back, or we can give them to Jay. I assume we'll deliver the tape back to you guys anyway, whichever you would prefer. We can bring them to the commission or to your office, Mr. Mann, whichever you prefer.
Mr. Schmidt, do you have a preference on that?
I guess, Mr. Morrison, I can coordinate about that and get something figured out. You can just drop them off at my office otherwise. Or what's preferable to you, Your Honor?
I guess if you just delivered them to the PSC, that would be my preference.
And that will be what we move on.
Okay.
They may get there this afternoon, but more likely tomorrow. So.
Okay. Mr. Schmidt, did you have any other comments?
Just one house cleaning matter. The email that Commissioner Fedorchak alluded to, can you state who that email was from one more time?
Sure. That was Vanita Best.
Vanita Best.
And I will docket that.
Yep. I guess we just wanted to make sure that we had that on the record. And as long as it's on the docket, I think we'll be okay. Or we could enter that as a Liefeld exhibit, too. Sure.
She did also include some other folks, including employee for One Oak.
Well, are you asking for that to be a late file exhibit?
Let's just do it that way. Can we? We request that that's a late file exhibit.
And I guess, Mr. Morrison, you haven't had the opportunity to see that email. I think that Commissioner Fedorchak essentially summarized it when she had the questions and mentioned it. Do you think that you need to see a copy of that email at this point before we close the hearing, or will you be comfortable with the summary and then having the email filed as a late filed exhibit?
I'm sure that will be fine.
Okay. Anything else?
I have nothing further, Your Honor.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
I'll be brief, but I just want to say thanks to everyone. We had a good thorough review of the cultural and environmental impacts of this project, as well as a good discussion on the safety components of that have already been included in this project and will be moving forward. I appreciate the company's commitment to safety and to working with the locals at every step of the way on a project of this nature, and appreciate your commitment to investing in North Dakota and just being a good neighbor and a good corporate citizen in our state. So we will work through proposed findings. I'm sure you'll provide them fairly quickly, and we'll work through those and get this wrapped up as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Was kind of a new experiment for us of having a hearing like this from other than the actual site of the hearing. And I think from my perspective, it's worked fairly well. I missed the opportunity to be able to look the local people square in the eye and encourage them to step up and provide testimony. But under the circumstances, I think we did the best we could. And other than a little bit of feedback here on our end, only when we are talking, I think that that went fairly well. From my perspective, you know, I always look at things with a little bit of sadness when a nice piece of ag land is going to cease to be an ag production. But on the other hand, you know, there's been a lot made of the situation with flaring and failing to make full use of the natural gas resource that comes with our oil and gas industry in North Dakota. And so it is exciting to be a part of overseeing the potential approval of a big facility like this that would in fact go a long ways toward lessening the amount of gas that needs to be flared. And so I appreciate the, you know, a pretty thorough application that was turned in. That's one reason for those that are there locally for maybe not even a lot more questions, because there's a thorough application that was put in front of us that we all had quite a long time to read over in advance, and it in fact answered a lot of the questions, so they didn't need to be asked today. But I think this has been a good application, a good hearing, and I look forward to the closing out documents and conclusions that I expect the judge will ask for, and we'll move on. Thank you.
Commissioner Kolk.
Just thank everyone for the flexibility today. I think the key thing for me was able to get all the information to make a decision, and that certainly took place today. Just one thing I'll throw out there is that, you know, there's a lot of strain up there in McKenzie County now with some of the gas companies are trying to exercise that they can follow federal jurisdiction, not have to worry about state and local jurisdiction. And so I know you're not going to do that, but anything you can do to talk with the county earlier, it just keep those bridges open, because, you know, you've got a good company, you're doing things well, just keep the communication open with the counties. I think it'll help all of us down the road.
Thank you. Mr. Morrison, will you be submitting a proposed findings and a proposed order?
Yes, I will, Your Honor.
Okay. Anything else on your end?
Nothing from here.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Schmidt?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. That will conclude the public hearing on this matter.
Thank you.